Welcome to the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
It's Indiana.
Watford for the win! Yes! Yes! Unbelievable!
Your daily home for complete coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers and sports from a Southern Indiana perspective.
Welcome to Indiana basketball.
Smart takes the shot! Oh, and the Hoosiers with 3 seconds. Go ahead.
Indiana wins the championship. Keith Smart is the hero.
When my time on Earth is gone and my activities here are past, I want they bury me upside down and my critics can kiss my...
Now here's your host, Matt Dennison.
It's Indiana, what I feel is the pinnacle, the absolute pinnacle of all of college basketball.
And good morning. Welcome to the Hoosier Report on this Monday, August 26th. Complete coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers in sports from a Southern Indiana perspective. Matt not here today, obviously. Lee Kelly sitting in with you. Matt will be back tomorrow, as every weekday at 11 a.m. Replays most days at 3 p.m. here on Big X Sports Radio. Show is always available as a podcast on either Apple Podcasts or SoundCloud, and there's many ways to catch the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison, including here on Big X Sports Radio, WXVW, streaming audio. You can dial in on your phone, just lots of ways to catch the show every day. Well, it's time to announce the first Big X Sports Radio Athlete of the Week, presented by Serdano's Pizza, Parlor in Sellersburg. This is our first award winner for the 19-20 high school sports season. The winner could be a part of any sport at any Clark or Floyd County High School. So after a review of activities over the last week, including the opening weekend of high school football, we have decided the first recipient of the Big X Sports Radio Athlete of the Week, presented by Serdano's Pizza Parlor in Sellersburg, is New Albany sophomore quarterback Keandre Winford. Keandre had 119 yards rushing and 2 touchdowns. He added to that 111 yards passing with 1 touchdown in the Bulldog 26-6 win over Evansville Harrison. So for week number one, the Big X Sports Radio Athlete of the Week, presented by Serdano's Pizza, Keandre Winford. And winning athletes will receive a 14-inch pizza from Serdano's as part of that. Hometown pizza at its best. You certainly can't beat Serdano's Pizza Parlor in Sellersburg. Their pizza is a thin crust made to order and sliced in square pieces. Check them out if you haven't already. Serdano's Pizza, squarely the best. Let's take a look at the guest lineup today. It is a service of Honey Baked Ham in New Albany. Segment one, always a look at the Hoosier headlines, a summary of the top Hoosier headlines in Southern Indiana news. And then segment two, Zach Osterman of the Indianapolis Star. And our final segment, Chad Gilbert, athletic director at Charlestown High School, a member of the IHSAA Executive Board. And that's the guest lineup for this Monday, August the 26th, a service of Honey Baked Ham in New Albany. Mention the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison, and you will get $1 off a box lunch at Honey Baked Ham in New Albany. Topping the sports headlines for this past weekend, I think probably most of you can guess, Andrew Luck announcing his retirement. The story leaked during the Colts preseason game on Saturday evening, and that led to a chorus of boos as Andrew left the field. The coverage in all forms of media has been extensive, to say the least. Get into this a little bit more with Zach Osterman in segment two, but certainly stunned a lot of people. The person that I know that was the maddest is the guy that took him in his fantasy league football team. But some believe that he walked away when he really didn't have to. Others believe that he was looking out for his health for the rest of his life. The man has had some injuries that we know about, and certainly I'm sure there were more that did not become obvious to the public. So Andrew Luck calling it a career, at least for now, with the Indianapolis Colts, and that certainly changes a lot of things. College football season opened this past weekend with a few contests. This coming Labor Day weekend, though, we'll see basically everybody in all division levels trying to get the season off to a winning start. IU will travel to Indianapolis and Lucas Oil Stadium for a noontime meeting with Ball State. You can hear all the action with Don Fisher right here on Big X Sports Radio, WXVW. IU did release its 2019-2020 schedule for basketball Friday afternoon. Hoosiers will play 11 non-conference contests, 20 league games for the second straight season. All seven of the Hoosier games in November will be at home. The Big Ten tourney comes back to Indianapolis, and that is a good thing for IU as well as Purdue. Class of 2020 forward Jalen Bridges announced his five finalists on Saturday afternoon. Indiana made the cut. The 6'7 forward from Fairmont, West Virginia, is down to Alabama, Indiana, Miami, West Virginia, and Xavier. Bridges will play his final year of high school basketball at Scotland Performance Institute. That's located in Pennsylvania. High school football got in action last Friday night. Let's take a look at some of those games. Silver Creek knocked off Charlestown 13-7. Pirates led until midway through the fourth quarter, and then bad things happened for the Pirates. Marion Lutz gave them the lead with a 70-yard run, but Silver Creek scoring two touchdowns in the final 7 minutes of the game came out on top. New Albany knocked off Evansville Harrison 26-6. Coach Cooley picking up that season-opening victory on his wife's birthday. Scottsburg knocked off Clarksville 21-20 for a long time. It looked like the Generals might very well get their first win in 46 games. Oh, so close, but could not hold on for the win at the end. But they're playing much better football, putting a program together. Congratulations to Coach Bozier on a nice performance, good group of young men, and something good's going to happen to that team this season. Fern Creek knocked off Jeffersonville 25-6. Mayo knocked off Floyd Central 42-13. Providence, a winner over Bardstown Bethlehem 29-20. And Oldenburg Academy 42, Rock Creek 6. Best performances over the Friday night football openers. Keandre Winford, as we mentioned, of New Albany, had a big night with over 230 yards of offense, counted for three touchdowns. Jeremy Gettelfinger of Providence, 106 yards rushing. And Marion Lukes, 179 yards rushing. And that first half touchdown for the Pirates. And if you're in the Little League World Series, it finally came to a close yesterday with Louisiana knocking off Curacao by a score of 8-0 to win the first Little League championship for the state of Louisiana. So that's a look at our headlines. We're going to take a break, and we'll be back in just a moment with the Indianapolis Stars' Zach Osterman. We'll talk a little bit about a lot of things here on the Hoosier Report, with Lee Kelly sitting in for Matt Dennison on this Monday morning.
We're back on the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison. Join Matt daily at 11 a.m. and 3 p.m. for complete coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers and sports from a Southern Indiana perspective.
I'll handle this the way I want to handle it now that I'm here. You it up to begin with. Now just sit there or leave. I don't give a what you do. Now, back to the game.
Here's Matt Dennison.
Back with segment two, our guest, Zach Osterman of the Indianapolis Star, with us on a Monday here on the Hoosier Report. Good morning, Zach.
Hey, how we doing?
So far, so good. How about you? You got a lot of things going on up Indy Way this morning.
Yeah, no, it's all kicking off literally and figuratively here this week.
Let's might as well right out of the bag talk a little bit about what happened on Saturday. Andrew Luck announcing his retirement. We're, as just the average fan sitting at home and saw it scroll across the bottom of the screen, I was shocked, but I'm not in the know. Did you have any inkling this was coming up anytime soon or at all?
No, I mean, and obviously, I mean, I spend most of my time worrying about IU, so it's you know, I kind of duck into and out of things like the Colts and the Pacers, but I think this caught everybody by surprise, and in one way, I don't know how it couldn't. I think that, you know, understandably, people sort of saw Andrew Luck as maybe more likely to do this than the average player. He's always been a very thoughtful guy, a very worldly guy, you know, somebody who maybe was always going to live on his own terms, so to speak. But nevertheless, you know, we've seen players do this in recent years, walk away saying they just feel that the physical demands are too much, that they just, you know, that they're not willing to sort of take their body all the way down the line with football. But we've never seen a franchise quarterback do it. I think that's the difference. And then when you couple it, obviously, to the timing so close to the season, I think that's where it kind of had that shock factor for people.
Yeah, boy, and there has been some difference of opinions on how people feel about this. And like I said, I'm the average fan. I can't say I'm a Giants Colt fan. I watched them play. I have liked to watch this young man play, and I think he's very competitive, and I think he gave everything he had. I give him a tip of the cap for that. But he's been praised, and he certainly has taken a fair amount of abuse for what has happened so far.
Yeah, you know, I'm going to be honest, and I'm not – please understand, I'm not in any way comparing my brief and unspectacular football career to Andrew Luck's, but I played for 2 years in high school, and when I was in seventh grade, I suffered a rather bizarre neck injury that's kind of come and gone ever since in terms of, you know, having an effect on my life, and I've gone through physical therapy and things like that for it, and over the course of kind of all of that, it's been generally agreed that my time in, you know, just 2 years of really poorly played football in high school probably exacerbated that neck injury to such a degree that it's something I'm just going to have to live with the rest of my life. And when it's at its worst, I mean, I struggle to get out of bed in the morning. And I mean, physically, I have to sort of slide out of bed. I can't imagine what someone who just thinking about the injuries that we've had documented, the injuries we know about, the, you know, the concussion, the ankle, I think he had a rib injury. You know, there's the sort of infamous story about his kidney and how I think there was blood in his urine at one point. These are just the injuries we know about. Any athlete in any sport will tell you that they play through injuries that nobody's ever aware of. They play hurt. They play injured. They take injections. They push through pain in ways that people will probably never know. And if that's just what we know, then you can only imagine kind of what Andrew Luck has dealt with that maybe we've never been aware of. And just the idea that I get the emotional response, especially in the moment, because it comes so close to the season, because it does, in a way, sort of leave the Colts in an unenviable position. But, you know, to suggest with a straight face once the dust is settled that this somehow makes Andrew Luck soft or, you know, wimpy or whatever is just, it's not only unfair, I think it's inaccurate. Just what we ask football players to put up with from a physical perspective anymore, much less quarterbacks.
Yeah, I agree.
I would just applaud him for, if he felt like he needed to walk away before it just got to be something that was just going to change his life forever, I applaud him for having the strength to do that, frankly.
The guy that I've met that has been the maddest was the guy that drafted him on his fantasy football team, and I had to laugh at how angry this guy was. So it is amazing the way it affects people, and certainly interesting. Let's move on a little bit. It's a big opening week for IU football. They this Saturday we'll get to see what they're all about with a game at Ball State at Lucas Oil Stadium. And your thoughts on IU football going into the season, Zach?
It's interesting. It's hard to pin down. You know, we put together our preseason podcast yesterday. And just kind of the in-house podcast we do, and you felt like there were certainly reasons to be optimistic, and I know I've discussed those with Matt, with other people down the weeks, in terms of depth and on defense, in terms of in terms of kind of where things stand from a skill player's perspective, from an experience perspective. But you still got big questions. I think depth on both lines, production on the defensive line, and then, of course, as ever, who's behind center? I think we'll probably learn that today when Tom Allen speaks at his weekly Monday press conference, his first of the year, whether it's Michael Penix or Peyton Ramsey or perhaps even Jack Tuttle. But I think that it makes, particularly if it's not Ramsey, if it's one of the guys who's got obviously a lot less experience than Ramsey, it makes these first couple games pretty difficult, I would rather say important for Indiana to work through some mistakes, to work out some kinks, if it is one of the two redshirt freshmen, to let them work through whatever they need to work through from a schematic perspective, a preparation perspective, whatever it may be, because Indiana needs that guy sharp by week three when Ohio State comes into town.
As you look at this team, and I saw an article about the receiving core for IU that thinks they can be the best in the Big Ten. And would you say that's one of the strongest parts of the IU team going in? And it before the season opener, so it's all guesswork to a certain degree. But what do you think's the strongest part of that team?
Well, I think, if we're talking position by position, I just kicked one of my son's toys. I think it'll probably be the secondary. I think Indiana's secondary, it's young, but it's very deep. It's very experienced, especially for its age. And I think you just see a lot of playmakers back there. I think that wide receiver position probably has a chance, certainly, to be one of the best in the Big Ten. Probably the most proven offensive position, at least skill position, right now. There's just a lot of depth there. There's a lot of different kinds of players. You know, guys, big-bodied receivers, faster receivers, possession receivers, et cetera, that I think could be real game-changers for Indiana. But, anytime you're talking about either side, and I come back to that discussion in particular about the offensive line, anytime you're talking about any of your skill positions on either side of the ball, if you want to call it defensive back sort of a skill position, you're always a little bit worried about that, the line. You know, can an offensive line block effectively enough to establish a run game, give a quarterback time, let a passing game really get going? Can a defensive line disrupt enough, control the line of scrimmage enough to let the linebackers in the secondary go make plays? That's where I think that those questions kind of come in really into focus for Indiana here in the first few weeks of the season. Because those are units that I think can be pretty good for Indiana this season, the offensive and defensive lines, but they're units that obviously I think are going to take a little bit of time to really sort of iron out. These are the rotations. These are the guys that are going to provide depth. These are the playmakers that we're going to be looking to regularly on Saturday.
I just read your article this morning, matter of fact, about the families being invited to be a part of the family at IU. Thought it was a great article. And it looks, from the outside looking in, that the program at IU is much more than just being an athletic team, that Tom Allen really does try to promote the family atmosphere by making the families of the players part of the whole process.
Yeah, players and coaches. I think there's a lot of reasons for that. I think there's a comfort factor. I think that there's an appreciation, whether it be players or certainly coaches, that, the job takes those coaches away from their families a lot, and that's inevitable. That's unfortunately sort of part of the the lifestyle that you lead. It's a lot of long days. It's a lot of travel, et cetera. You know, the other thing that I thought was a point that actually was raised in that article by Nick Sheridan, who's IU's tight ends coach. He has a young son. Actually, I think he may have just turned one a few weeks ago, which is that, you know, it's important for, if you want to think about sort of the holistic idea of teaching players not just how to be better football players, but better people, one of the things that approach does is it allows players to see their coaches act like fathers, and it allows them to see, you know, how important that kind of role can be, and how, you know, how not, I won't say rewarding or fulfilling, because I don't think that, you know, Indiana sort of saying, no, you all need to go out and be fathers. I think it's more the idea, though, that a lot of these kids will probably be fathers someday. Certainly a lot of them will seek futures outside of football, so it's not like what they're doing on, you know, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday is going to be kind of the defining arc of their lives. But this is a chance to sort of show them this is how to be a good father. This is how to be a good parent and carry all of that forward. And so I think for a lot of reasons, you know, it's worth pointing out too. I think it should be pointed out. Kevin Wilson did that before Tom Allen. It's not like Allen has a monopoly on this sort of thing. But I think Tom Allen's attitude is essentially, you know, let's promote this idea that this program is a family as much as possible, not just to make people feel sort of, you know, insular and together, but also to provide good examples to players and just generally, frankly, to make up for some of the time that, whether it be players or coaches, you're not going to be able to spend with your kids during football season.
The IU basketball schedule was recently released, and as you looked over it for the first time, Zach, anything jump out at you as good, bad, or indifferent?
I think, well, you know, first of all, we knew it was going to be a potentially more manageable non-conference schedule than what Indiana had last season, because there wasn't any trip to Duke, there wasn't any trip to Arkansas. A lot more of those games are at home this year. It is noticeable, and I you know, this, we could probably get into a whole separate debate about the NCAA Selection Committee and its priorities and its processes and all that, but it was noticeable to me the degree to which Indiana lightened its load in terms of opponents and opponent quality in November. The season after, Indiana basically had one of the weirdest, most lopsided resumes I've ever seen, where on the one hand, obviously a high number of losses, you know, a lot of sort of concern on that side of the column. On the other hand, some of the highest quality wins of any bubble team, you know, certainly last year, but you know, certainly one of, I'd say, the strongest resumes in terms of quality wins in a bubble team I've seen in recent memory. So, you know, Indiana obviously, I don't think really, and you heard Archie Miller say this after the selection show last season, Indiana really couldn't complain about its fate on Selection Sunday. It had its opportunities to control what it could control. It failed to, and therefore it came up short in the end. But I think from Indiana's perspective, there was also a message that was delivered relatively loud and clear from the selection committee, which was, you know, at some point, we need to see quantity of wins. We don't necessarily need to see a huge quantity of wins, but it's really hard for us in good faith to put a 17-15 team into the tournament. They didn't say that explicitly, but I think you certainly heard in sort of the explanation of the reasoning of the committee afterward that was probably something that weighed Indiana down. And so maybe it's a way of saying, challenge yourself if you're Indiana, but maybe not. Don't go so over the top that you wind up crippling your own resume. The goalposts always shift on Selection Sunday. It feels like every year the criteria is a little bit different, and it's always a moving target. But it was noticeable to me to see Indiana, like I said, just kind of lighten the load a little bit in November and allow itself a little time to really sort of bed into the season before things get obviously really, really tight in the season's second month.
Yeah, all seven games in November will be at home, and that should make IU fans happy, a good opportunity to catch them early in the season and get off on the right foot. Although The quality of the opponents, I saw in one article, it kind of questioned, you know, how much tension can IU get? Would any of these teams, beating any of these teams, help them move up in the rankings and so on? But let's worry about getting 7 wins and not so much about how it affects the ratings at that point in the year.
No, I mean, listen, I have to go back and look at the numbers, but I think in per Ken Pomeroy's numbers, only one of those 7 teams, or one of Indiana's first 6 opponents, excuse me, finished last season in Ken Pom's top 150. Only two of those first 6 finished in the top 200 or top, maybe the top 175. You know, the I don't want to say the marquee opponent of November, but the opponent that would have finished last season highest ranked is South Dakota State, excuse me, a team that's obviously had a lot of success in the Summit League in the last few years, but also a team that's going to be breaking in a new head coach and graduated its star player Mike Daum last season. So you're talking about, even in South Dakota State, it's not really a team that's, you know, it's whatever its rankings at the end of last season were, that's not going to be reflective of the team that you see necessarily in Assembly Hall come November. But again, I think that, I mean, first of all, you'd also say December is plenty challenging. Indiana is going to host Florida State. It's got its first 2 Big Ten games. It's at Wisconsin and then Nebraska at home. Wedged in there as well is a trip to New York to play UConn in the Jimmy V Classic. They play Notre Dame in the Crossroads Classic. They host Arkansas at the end of December. So December will give you plenty of opportunities for quality wins, plenty of opportunities to really sort of make your resume if you need to. But November will ensure that a team that's got a fair bit to sort of work out and a few kinks, frankly, to smooth over between now and the restarted Big Ten play at the new year, we'll get probably a full month where you'd pencil Indiana in to win any of those first 7 games, and they'll be allowed the time to just sort of take a breath, get their feet under them, work out some of the problems that you may have from new faces, different rotations and things, and then really prepare to attack it, because once December starts, it kind of doesn't stop.
One final thing for Zach Osterman this morning of the Indianapolis Star. Purdue-IU football game, should it be on campus or should they move it to a neutral site like Lucas Oil? Your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I sort of refrained from trying to insert my own opinion into this too much, though I did kind of get into a little bit of Twitter banter about it or whatever. I think, first of all, it's worth saying it's not moving. Indiana has no interest in moving that game to Lucas Oil Stadium, and obviously in a case like this, it sort of takes 2 to tango. It's not like one of the schools could unilaterally make decisions about the future of the game or the future of the series over the other. So it's not going anywhere. It's staying on the campuses. You know, the second thing for me is that I just think rivalry games work better on the campuses, and I certainly agree with what Mike Babinski said, which is that it's good for season ticket sales. And I think when he says that, it's not just about the financial side. It's also about sort of being able to sell something to your fans and say, listen, every other year, your season ticket package ends with you in the stands at home cheering against your rival. And that there's something to college football that I think really makes that special and makes that important and makes that worth, you know, sort of maintaining. I think the other part of it is just I've seen neutral sites for in-state rivalry games before. Obviously, the most probably high-profile one would be the Iron Bowl, which up until I think about maybe 15 years ago was 15, 20 years ago was played at Legion Field in Birmingham. I just think the campuses work better. I think that the neutral sites work well for games like Oklahoma-Texas, where it's an interstate rivalry. You know, there's no natural sort of it's natural to take that to a neutral site because there's you're not talking about something that's happening within your state lines. But I think when it comes to the in-state stuff, I just think it's better on the campuses. I think it's a good atmosphere. I get what people say about Thanksgiving and that sort of thing. And, you know, it used to be that the game was the weekend before Thanksgiving, and now it's the weekend after, and you can never get students there and so on and so on. But I think that gets overblown a little bit. And even there, I don't know that you necessarily moving it to Indianapolis would just automatically bump, you know, all sales up forever. I just think, especially when you sort of take into account the
the conflicts you would inevitably run into with the IHSAA state finals, with the Colts schedule, and so on and so on. I think it should stay on the campuses.
I agree. I think leaving it on campus is a great idea. Zach, I've enjoyed our conversation this morning. Thank you very much for joining us.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Zach Osterman of the Indianapolis Star. We'll be back with segment three coming up in just a moment here on Big X Sports Radio.
We're back on the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
Let's win this one for all the small schools who never had a chance to get here.
Join Matt daily at 11 a.m. and 3 p.m. for complete coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers and sports from a Southern Indiana perspective.
Let's win for Coach. You got us here.
Here's Matt Dennison.
Lee Kelly sitting in for Matt Dennison here on a Monday morning. Glad you're with us, and Matt will be back tomorrow with all of his guests and information as you get it all right here on the Hoosier Report. Our final guest today, the athletic director at Charlestown High School, Chad Gilbert, also a member of the IHSAA Executive Board. Good morning, Chad.
Good morning, Lee. How are you doing today?
So far, so good for a Monday especially. I'm pretty pleased with the way things are going.
Well, I know a Silver Creek guy like you is happy that the Dragons defeated the Pirates in their opening weekend. A little somber here at Charlestown today, but we got to get right back on that horse. We're going with Brownstown this Friday.
Yeah, I saw that. I've got to tell you, I was sitting in the studio with Matt on Friday night, and we were watching the video feed. That was in a tremendous crowd and atmosphere for that game. It looked like both schools really had a fantastic attendance that night.
Well, Lee, you know, the one thing is I honestly believe that, and that this is going to go back to your last segment with Zach a little bit, that your first week is your biggest excitement, your biggest crowd. You know, you got your homecomings, you got your rivalry, but you talked about that Purdue-IU game. Why not play it week one to kick off the season? And that being said, you know, in college football, it's such a depth game. You know, it's who has the most players, because the depth chart, let's just say in Alabama, for instance, their twos and threes are a lot of teams' ones, if that makes any sense,
yeah,
on the depth chart. And with IU and Purdue, if you play the first game of the year, you're going to have an excited crowd. You're going to have a big rivalry. And from a coaching aspect, you're going to have all your ones. You're going to have your best players hopefully available week one to go at it, where at the end of the year, you don't know who's been beat up the week before, who's been beat up injuries from that. At least at the start of the year, you've got your best players going at it. And that's just something to think about, something that my opinion will not matter, but it's just something that would create a little bit more excitement. And from a coaching standpoint, you've got your best players, you've got your game planning going into that first game, that I think you could really put your best foot forward.
Well, and the other thing is weather. You know, it may be hot,
right?
Could have a thunderstorm, but the weather is probably going to be better in August than it is in November or October for a high school game.
Absolutely. When you talked about August games, I've been in some August games. We're stopping the clock every 5 minutes for a water break. Last Friday was the most beautiful Friday of football in August I can ever remember in 23 years of teaching. The weather was outstanding for Friday night, and Silver Creek did a magnificent job hosting. There was a great gate, and that gate generally, you know, we've hyped it up a little bit with our fans, our parents, Coach Dabo and myself. We've kind of got a little battle of 403 going to it, that it's a big time atmosphere coming out of the chute, and it was a big crowd. You know, I wish I was hosting that game last Friday, Lee, so we could have gotten that gate. But, you know, one of our biggest crowds, probably our biggest football crowd, you know, biggest crowd we've ever had was the Romeo Gate. The second biggest crowd, if you can remember years ago, probably 5 years ago, Coach Hawkins left Charlestown for one season and went to Silver Creek. And we hosted that year. We, you know, not to put money or anything, but that was a $12,000 gate. It was outstanding that night. And it was that rivalry. It was Charlestown people coming out to beat Silver Creek, but also to beat Coach Hawkins. And then the Silver Creek people were out there to beat Charlestown, but to support Coach Hawkins. So it had a little bit of feel to it, and it was an outstanding crowd. It was a great atmosphere. And anytime you have a rivalry involved with something like that, I think your kids – kind of feel special. And that's what, you know, education-based athletics is all about. You know, you want to get it done in the classroom, number one, but you want to create memories, create experiences that are going to last you a long, long time throughout your life that you can tell your kids about, their kids can tell them about. And, you know, you think about that Messer kid who ran that touchdown back. He's going to have that experience in his mind for a long, long time, you know, that he ran a punt return back to win the game. So a lot of excitement with that, a lot of memories, and it was a great atmosphere. Now, from the Charlestown standpoint, this isn't Coach Hawkins' first rodeo. You know, Coach Pappenhaus, being at Charlestown staff, he probably knew some of the wrinkles that Coach Hawkins was going to throw at him. But, you know, congratulations to Coach Pappenhaus as well, Lee, for getting his first varsity win. But Coach Hawkins is a veteran coach. He's back to the drawing board. He'll make some adjustments, figure some things out, and want to put kids in the best position to be successful and try to move on from this. Unfortunately, he has to move on facing one of the best coaches in the history of Indiana high school football in Reed May. So we'll see how it goes on Friday night.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you mentioned one thing that I want to get into a little bit. You mentioned finances at the high school level, and I know there are people out there that think that the school corporation picks up the tabs for the uniforms and the travel and the food when you take players on long trips. Not exactly the case. So tell us a little bit about how important getting a big gate is and maintaining that good attendance and that good flow of money coming into the athletic department year after year.
Well, you know, just looking on last year's finances alone, you have cross country who you pay to go into invites. To enter your team an invite, it costs X amount of dollars. So you lose money in cross-country automatically. Tennis, there's no gate. You pay for the tennis balls. You pay for your transportation, boys and girls tennis. Golf, no gate. Same thing with those things. So your other sports, there's sometimes that you're out there and you're counting, saying, do we have enough to pay for these referees? And if you think of a high school game, you know, by the time that you're to get the thing going, it's about $500 up front just to start a game, the time you pay your scorekeeper, the time you pay your clock keeper, the time you pay your PA announcer. You got someone running the concession stand. You got two JV referees. You got three varsity referees, security at the event, on and on and on. And those are things that people don't realize. You know, we have things where all sport passes, you know, some people try to get in. We trade some workers out for all sport passes up here. But at the end of the day, referees don't work for free. Uniforms aren't for free. Transportation is not for free. You've got to figure out ways that you can get people in the seats to help pay for that event because, Lee, I tell you what, it goes quick. Once you come in there and you run an event and you see at the end of the night how much expenses you have out, it goes quick. And one thing that the perception is a school corporation, let's use Greater Clark, for example, or New Albany Floyd, for instance. They have New Albany and they have Floyd Central. It's not like the corporation says, all right, BJ, Jeff, Sequeira, here's $10,000. Make it last throughout the season. That's not how it works. Your only revenue is based on what sponsorships you can go out and get for the athletic program and what tickets you sell for your events. And at sometimes that's hard to stretch that out, Lee. I mean, it goes quick. You have a bad night. Let's say that Brownstown this Friday. We're expecting a big gate Friday. Let's say it rains. That's going to really hurt us hard. And, you know, you have so many hidden expenses for football every year. We have to get about a $5,000 bill every year, Lee, on reconditioning our equipment. So what that means is we don't get anything new. We just make sure what we've got is safe and reconditioned. And that's off the top every year. So the money that comes in, it goes quick, but it's something that you hope your community gets behind you. You hope it gets behind your programs. You hope it gets behind your school, and you hope it supports your student athletes who have a good experience, just like the people in our community did.
Yeah, you know, as I think back to my high school days 100 years ago, far fewer sports played by most schools. I mean, it's at Silver Creek. I think they had cross country in the fall for the boys and girls. I think that was it. In the winter time, you had basketball, and in the spring you had baseball. There was no softball. You had boys and girls track. Now there's 10 sports for boys, 10 sports for girls, and that's not counting the two co-ed athletic programs, Unified Flag Football and Unified Track and Field, that most schools have. I know there are some that do not have football, and there's probably some that do not have other sports, but, man, that's a lot of kids, a lot of coaches wanting money out of that budget that you can't just say nope, as they did at Silver Creek at times back in the old days. It all goes to basketball because they generate all the income. You can't do that anymore.
No, and, you know, right now, this, you know, August 26th is the busiest time of an athletic director's school year because the school, the events are running. You know, once we get past Labor Day this weekend, you know, the hay's in the barn. You know, it's just a matter of putting out fires and going. And it's we're semi to that point right now. But you're making sure physicals are squared away. You're making sure your transportation is squared away. You're making sure your schedules are lined up. You're making sure all your coaches are background checked. There's so much involved right now at this time of the year with, and you said it, you know, there's 10 boys sports, 10 girls sports. The fall, you have 8 sports running right now between the boys and the girls. So there's 20 sports total. You have 8 of them running right now when you factor in cheerleading as well. And it is an athletic director's nightmare to get stuff going. Now, once it goes, but it's one of these times right now. This is so busy time of the year for ADs, Lee, that it's nuts. And what I'm going back to your point on is there's so many opportunities for kids to do different things now that we really encourage our kids to get involved. We've got a bowling team here. We've got a fishing team here that we try to get something that maybe football's not for everybody, but maybe there's something that you can get involved with that makes your high school experience better that it'll all be worth it.
It would have helped me any because I wasn't any good at bowling and I certainly wasn't any good at fishing, so it would not have provided anything. You know, like, what is the health of high school athletics right now? And there's such a difference. We talk about Silver Creek and Charlestown and New Albany and Jeff and so on, and we see pretty good crowds year in and year out. You can go to a game in Indianapolis, and I was always amazed. I mean, there would be virtually nobody there for the home team. And I wondered, how in the world do they make all of this work? Is their football team so successful that they fill the stadium for football, or where does their money come from at some of these schools? And being on the board, I know you have conversations with other ADs, and you share ideas about ways to make money, but what is the state of high school athletics right now in Indiana?
Well, I think right now it's never been stronger. Now, you're getting to the point now where club teams and travel teams, you're seeing that stuff pick up a little bit of momentum. And that's something that, to me, it's just not the same experience. I mean, Lee, you've been around a lot of sports. Have you been to a club team that says, Home Run Giants? You know, you don't go back that. You're not wearing your Home Run Giants hat. Now, you may be going out there to support your daughter or your granddaughter or something at some point, but you're not just going as an average fan to watch a travel team, which is some of that experience. But that being said, on the travel aspect, I know some guys who have spent a mint on the travel aspect on it, you know, who have done that to put their kids in a position to be successful, to do that, to give those kids the experiences that they need to supplement their high school sports. So, you know, in some places there is a little bit of pay per play. You know, that could come down here because you see a lot of kids that are playing a lot of travel volleyball, a lot of travel basketball, a lot of travel baseball, that you see that. And there may come to a point where there may be a little bit of pay to play in different schools throughout the state. But as you said that, you know, the state is a different creature, but it's really not. You know, the sections of the state, you've been around the state, Lee. If you go up north, there's sections just like our nook here of Floyd, Clark, Harrison counties, you know, Scott counties. There's that same place up north. There's that same place in the east. There's that same place in the west. The biggest creature that's the difference is Marion County, the circle there. And that's just, you know, because it's such a big city and just something that we can relate to. Watch the news sometimes during basketball season. Look how many people are in the crowd at Louisville games. Louisville high school games, you know, city high school games. There's just so much going on in cities that I think it is kind of hard to get people involved in. One thing that I think that has hurt high school boys basketball crowds is the resurgence of girls basketball. Girls basketball has become extremely popular, where back when it was just, let's give something for girls to do, where now girls basketball is one of your major sports in your school. And if you think about your schedule, let's say you've got a kid in the middle school who has a game on Monday, you've got a girls basketball game on Tuesday, You've got a cheerleading contest on Wednesday. Well, that Friday night boys varsity game comes around. You just say, I'm tired. I may not go to that game tonight. We're back, you know, when my dad was in school, when you were in school, even when I was in school for an extent, Friday night was what the community looked forward to get to that game. And I think there's just so much in the week that has the same type of excitement as what that Friday night game has right now that I think that kind of makes your crowd a little bit sparser. Now, when you have an exception like Romeo, who comes around once in a lifetime, the stuff that Silver Creek has going right now with their kids coming off a state championship, I think those tickets, you know, you're going to have big crowds no matter what, like you experienced with the Romeo thing. But curious to see how that stuff dwindles down as time goes on.
Yeah, absolutely. And as my friends refer to it, those Romeo bucks are going to come in handy, you know, for the next few years. But it's different, and yet it's different in a good way for the most part, the way the high schools are handling things. There is something for everybody if you get them involved. And do you find, even in the brief amount of time that you've been, well, as a coach, let's go back even further, as a coach and now as an athletic director, are there more kids involved in high school athletics, including cheerleading and dance teams and things like that, than when you remember when you first got involved at the high school level?
Well, you know, this is year 7 as athletic director. I've been out of coaching for 7 years now. And when you're coaching, you're kind of just focused on your team. You go to see other sports to support your coaches. You have that kind of fraternity with your coaches who are in your building or the kids that you have in the classroom. You kind of go out there, but you're not involved like the other coaches are in that sport. You're kind of just involved in your sport. You're focused on your thing. So for me to say that for the 13 years that I was a varsity coach, it's hard to say what was in there back then. But the way it is now, I do feel like there are a lot of kids involved. I think there are a lot of different options for kids to do. And I think that it's more, again, like we talked about earlier, it's something that keeps you occupied, that you're around people that have the same interest as you do, where you're not just on the phone scrolling through and looking at someone else's Facebook or their Twitter. You're actually making memories instead of looking at what someone else is doing. And with that, you're learning lifelong lessons about sacrifice. You're learning lifelong lessons about putting individual goals aside for the goodness of the team. You're learning skills that you can't teach on Facebook, or you can't teach just in the math classroom. You can't teach in the history classroom. You can't teach in the PE classroom. You've got that bond together that you guys are focused on achieving one common goal, and that's to be your very best and be successful. And I think that's something that you can't replace.
Yeah, I think you're right. And, you know, there are things, even with my memory, there are things that I remember from those days. I remember the night that your dad got, I think, 56 points or somewhere in that neighborhood. But I also remember that the young man in my class who came out with his uniform inside out on a game night. So you remember the good and the humorous, not necessarily the bad, but it was all part of the high school experience. And I think when kids don't come to athletic events, and I know it's hard, they have friends, and the friends expect them to come to the girls' game or the soccer boys' game or the soccer girls' game. There's so much that they are expected to do. I know it's tough to get to all of these things, especially if they are participating in a sport at the school as well. But, man, it makes a world of difference when I see these schools have their student bodies and they're there early and they're loud and they're cheering and they're having a great time. And it's a fun atmosphere. And I think they miss something when they don't get involved in that.
No, I agree. And you think about that. You know, we'll talk about just basketball, for instance. That smell of popcorn in a hot gym, and when you got the two student sections across from each other, you know, where they're just rooting each other's team on to be the best they can be, I think that makes your play better on the court because you want to do well for your teammates, you want to do well for yourself, and you want to represent your school well. And, you know, to see why people don't do it, I mean, you've been out as much as I have covering events. There's some times that, you know, let's say Louisville plays Duke. It'd be hard for me to get up if I had a night off on a Thursday to go see Louisville and Duke unless I got a parking pass, I got a front row seat, or I was in a suite. I just wouldn't go over there as a general person just to do that because I can watch it at home. I can see a good play and rewind it and watch it again. I can get a Coke out of the refrigerator. I don't have to wait in line. I can go to the restroom when I need to go to the restroom. And there's just so much convenience now, and you see more with IHSA TV, with more broadcasts going on, that, you know, the regional last year was a great Seymour regional, and you always want to go to that just for that atmosphere. I stayed at home and watched it on the computer, just not to fight that stuff, and one more night out. And I see where people come from that, but when you had that opportunity as a kid, or you had that opportunity as a parent, you know, you hope that your school gets behind you, and you hope they enjoy that, because it only comes around one time.
Absolutely. Chad Gilbert has been our guest this morning. Chad, thank you so much, and have a great week. Hope you have a great weather night and a great crowd for your Brownstown game this Friday.
Well, Lee, it's great talking to you. I appreciate you coming in here, and I really appreciate everything you, Matt, and everybody else does for Southern Indiana sports. That means a lot to old guys like me who really respect what high school sports are about, and I think it means a lot for our kids who are participating in it. So thank you.
I appreciate that. Thank you very much. Chad, we'll talk to you somewhere down the line. All right, ladies and gentlemen, that's going to just about wrap it up for the Hoosier Report for a Monday morning. Matt Dennison certainly will be back with you tomorrow morning. You can catch it on the podcast on Apple Podcast or SoundCloud, as well as a repeat this afternoon at 3 o'clock. Again, we want to remind you one more time, week number one, Big X Sports Radio Athlete of the Week, presented by Sordano's Pizza. Keandre Winford is the winner of week number one. Full slate of football coming up this Friday night. IU will play Ball State. That'll be at Lucas Oil Stadium. That is a 12 noon game, and that'll be right here on WXVW. You can listen to Don Fisher, the best in the business, in my opinion. What a great voice, does a great job with play-by-play. So, again, that's going to wrap it up for us. Thank you to Matt Dennison for letting me set in this morning. Had a good time. We appreciate and thank Zach Osterman of the Indianapolis Star, and Chad Gilbert, athletic director at Charlestown. That's going to wrap it up for the Hoosier Report.